Steve. Thanks. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Kristen McQuarrie joins us right now, fine columnist for the Chicago Tribune. We want to talk about what happened yesterday nationally with the primaries, but Karen Lewis just referred to Governor Rauner as the new ISIS. That's a weird compliment, isn't it? When you call somebody the new ISIS?
You know, I guess you just can't be surprised by anything she says. And I've written columns about it, so I'm not surprising any of your listeners that I'm not her biggest fan. I don't think she really represents what teachers are looking for. She kind of represents the more radical side of the union. And she gets away with saying all kinds of outrageous things. And
it's a pretty remarkable thing, Bill, Wendy. You guys were talking, you know, just the last half hour about what Andrew Shaw said.
Yep. Right.
And the trouble he got into that. I mean, this is a group that cuts people's heads off, Americans' heads off.
Yep.
And, you know, the speech issues are very different, but it's a pretty dramatic thing to say about someone.
A couple of weeks ago, and believe me when I tell you, I'm the last guy that would defend Donald Trump, but there were several people comparing Donald Trump to Adolf Hitler, and I said, I get it, but think about what Adolf Hitler had done in his lifetime, where he was gassing people to death. You can find a lot of bad things to say about Donald Trump. He's not gassing people to death.
As far as I know, he's not calling for ethnic cleansing, far as I know.
Right.
But people kind of make that leap because he did call for a pause on Syrian refugees.
I know.
And that's, to me, a big stretch from a pause to, you know, encampments where killings.
So do people in the public eye, people who are politicians or around that circle, they're just as accountable as anybody else, if not more so, when you compare somebody to ISIS or Adolf Hitler? You have to choose those words pretty carefully, don't you?
I think so, yes. Yeah. She is right now, Karen Lewis, they are talking about striking perhaps as early as middle of next month. And, you know, she likes to give red meat type speeches, and that's what this was. I don't really know how helpful it is toward the cause of educating children when you have your chief educator, you know, saying things like this, and also tolerating at the latest CTU rally a speaker who kept saying F the police, you know, at an education rally that was supposed to be about funding.
Whoa.
We tolerate a lot from her, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about yesterday. No major surprises. I guess Ted Cruz didn't have quite the showing that he was hoping for, did he? But other than that, no major surprises.
Zero delegates.
Not a one.
Right?
Yeah.
Not a single one. And really didn't do as well in a lot of the more, there are some religious conservative enclaves in suburban New York, but they tend to be more Catholic than evangelical. So it was a pretty damaging loss for him that he came away with nothing, and John Kasich actually beat him.
So how did that happen exactly? What went on that more people in New York saw Kasich as a better option than Ted Cruz?
You know, it was in Manhattan where Kasich picked up, I think, these three delegates in that congressional district where Donald Trump lives. And I don't know. My knowledge of Manhattan is based on, like, Sex and the City episodes, so
right.
I'm super knowledgeable. But I get the impression that it's a more moderate, reasonable group of Republicans who would have rejected, you know, the Ted Cruz brand of far right, you know, very, very evangelical, and Donald Trump. And some people have suggested, you know, they see him all around town. His name is on every building. They might be a little over-Trumped, over-served with Trump being in and around their daily lives all the time. He's on the, you know, and just from, not just from this presidential race, but for decades, he's been on the covers of all the socialite magazines.
Yeah.
And so I think they're a little tired of him, and that came through last night, I think.
I want to know what's going to happen here with, how's Bernie doing?
You know, Bernie didn't have a great night either.
We expected Hillary to do well in New York, though.
We did. This is her adopted home state.
One of her 11 different home states.
Exactly. Well, I mean, they were broke when they left the White House, remember?
Yes.
She said that. They were.
Yes.
They were
how
really
broke.
I mean,
strapped
right.
for cash.
You know, until their first speaking engagement, where one of them raked in like $400,000.
I know. How do you get that? How do you get that? Yeah.
You know, I bet you could earn some money, Wendy
Snyder.
What
do I talk about?
Just, you know, do a little stand-up.
You could do it.
Talk about the radio business. People would I'm sure, pay $400K? $5 for that.
I was just going to say, I'm lucky to get $20. Thanks for the faith.
So Bernie did not do that well. And I think he kind of expected to do a little better because he's kind of a neighbor. And he's has been doing well in East Coast states. But Hillary just trounced him. I mean, he actually went home, I think, and did that. I don't remember which other candidate, maybe Marco Rubio or somebody said they went home in the middle of the campaign to change their clothes and take a day off. Well, so did Bernie. He's a little burned out.
But
himself.
A terrible time to
he's
do that.
He's feeling the burn.
He's feeling his own burn. So, yes, he wasn't even in New York.
Do you think the more aggressive tactic that he's taken, and actually not just him, but he and Hillary Clinton have been more aggressive toward each other, is that helping one or hurting one more than the other?
You know, I think it's kind of typical. And, you know, there's a lot of speculation that if they go too far, then she won't be able to get his supporters once she gets the nomination. They'll stay home. I don't really think so. I think every year you have a contested primary and that base of voters eventually is going to float over to Hillary Clinton. There's no way they're going to go to the other side. And so the biggest risk that she takes is that maybe they stay home. But I just think that's even a small possibility. They will eventually rally around the nominee. And it looked like last night it's going to be Hillary Clinton.
Let's say the nomination is held today and it is the front runner for the Republicans. It's Donald Trump and it's the front runner for the Democrats. It's Hillary Clinton. Does she win in a landslide only because he's so divisive and there's so many people? There's plenty of people who do support him, but there's so many more who do not. Is that a landslide victory for Hillary Clinton if it happens today?
Well, I will answer that question with the caveat that I've been wrong
at every turn. All right.
So, no, I don't think it's a landslide. I think he has this new campaign manager and someone who is supposedly reining him in and keeping him on message. And if he is able to do that for a long enough time, as we get closer to November, he could still be, you know, a huge factor, obviously. I just happen to think that most elections are decided by those independent kind of swing voters who go back and forth, and they are going to be more likely to vote for Hillary Clinton. We haven't talked about it for a while, but being the first woman, mm-hmm. That's going to be big. And even conservative writers and columnists have acknowledged that.
But when you say big in which way? Is it the novelty of having a woman potentially be the president, or how big in what way?
Yes, yeah. Big in that way, that you have a woman this close to the White House, just like Barack Obama. There were a lot of people who put a lot of faith in him, but also wanted to be alive, wanted to participate in the first black president.
Yeah.
That same factor, I think, will be for Hillary.
And who was it who said, shame on you for not wanting to vote for Hillary? You should. Who was it?
Madeleine Albright.
Oh, that's right.
The former
that's right.
Secretary of State that... What did she say? Shame on women who don't support women. It was more strongly worded than that. But yes.
Don't you believe that women are going to vote for Hillary just because of that? Not even necessarily what she stands for? Because I want a female president. I want the first woman president. Don't know that she's the right one to be the first female president, but we should have one.
Right. No, I do think there's a big swath of the population that will kind of scoot over to her. Not just women, but... She it's not like she's a woman and she's not qualified or something.
Right.
She kind
Definitely.
Of is the full package. And unless you have like this visceral reaction to her, I think she will get a lot of votes. I don't have a visceral reaction to her. She's not my favorite either. But and she doesn't poll well. I mean, if you look, her negatives are always really high. But again, we're going to be kind of pivoting to a general election here, and she's doing really well. I don't know if you watched the speeches last night. I only watched parts of them, the victory speeches of Trump and Clinton. But I kind of felt for the first time a little of that fever, like, here we go. Here are the nominees. We're taking off and going forward. There's not a lot of still talk of what's going to happen at the convention necessarily. And it just feels like the beginning to me.
All right. Let's examine a little bit more of that in just a little bit. If you have a question or a comment, 312-981-7200. That's our call line and our text line. It's Bill Leffin. It's Wendy Snyder, along with Kristen McQuarrie from the Tribune on WGN. Kristen McQuarrie is here from the Chicago Tribune. We're talking politics with her. All right. So if everything goes according to plan, you have Donald Trump and you have Hillary Clinton and they're running against each other. Those debates are going to be tricky for him because his perception is that he's not kind to women. His run-ins with Carly Fiorina during the Republican debates were not his best moments. What does he do differently when he's debating Hillary Clinton to make himself look better?
How about learn some stuff?
I'll go with that.
Let's start with, you know, as soon as this is kind of wrapped up and he can hit the pause button, getting into a room and doing some of the due diligence that all candidates do on foreign policy. And so he can't get away with just these broad, we're going to build a wall and make Mexico pay for it types of statements. His one advantage will be that Hillary Clinton is probably one of the most messaged and careful candidates that I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And it's almost frustrating. You can't get her off message. It's like everything she says feels like it's been poll tested. And so against someone like Donald Trump, who kind of can relate more to everyday people and they sort of feel like he at least speaks like an actual human being, he could do okay.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you remember it seems like every election cycle, somebody tries to get that zinger question, like, name the president of Egypt, you know, and, you know, Donald Trump is going to have a lot of stumbling around, I think, if it turns out.
So what normally happens is, as they go into debate season, they're constantly peppered with questions like the one you just mentioned, just to say, these are going to come up. You have to know these things. If you want to be the president or the vice president, that's the story about Sarah Palin is, They were constantly trying to groom her and say, these are our friends, these are our enemies, you have to know the difference, you have to know what country's on our side and which we're fighting against, and she couldn't do it. So is he savvy enough to learn that in a short span of time?
I don't think so. And he has in the past said, he's gotten away with saying, I'll just surround myself with people who do know. And that might be the better answer, because I always felt like when Sarah Palin was talking, I could see her in the mirror saying over and over again, Ahmadinejad,
yeah.
Ahmadinejad, yeah. You know, like rehearsing what right. She was going to say. And that's inauthentic, and people will pick up on that.
Yeah.
All right, what's next? So the big day in New York yesterday, what's next?
April 26th is Connecticut, Delaware, Maryland, Pennsylvania, and Rhode Island. So another big, big, big delegate pickup for whoever is successful. And those are seen as, so far, pro-Trump states, pro-Clinton states. And beyond that, May 3rd is Indiana. I'm interested in that because they're our neighbor.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, Wisconsin has kind of that Midwest sensibility where they went for Cruz and it was a big smack for Donald Trump. So will Indiana do the same? What's interesting going into this next round is that you always have momentum from big wins. And so now you have Trump and Clinton really looking like they're going to clinch it. And now you're seeing stories where people are saying he doesn't actually have to get to 1237, Trump, the delegate number. As long as he gets close enough to it, they won't be able to do any sort of tricks to try to, you know, have Cruz become the nominee. If he gets close enough, that will have to be good enough.
If you had to guess as to who the vice presidential candidate would be on both sides, what would your guess be?
Oh, you know, I used to say Nikki Haley or some of these other governors who are, you know, female and very accomplished, but Trump has, like, angered all of them.
Yeah.
So I really don't know on the Trump side. And for Clinton, she's going to have this has probably been figured out for 20 years, who is the best running mate for her geographically. And I don't really have a good sense for who that is yet.
Hasn't Trump said on more than one occasion, there are people that I would like to select as my vice presidential running mate, but they don't want to be my running mate? You know, he's mentioned a couple of names. Marco Rubio is one. He said, I would love to have him as a running mate, but I don't think he likes me. I don't think he would want to do it.
Right. I mean, so he was so polarizing during that whole primary. I mean, he is Chris Christie. He's got Chris Christie. And then one interesting thing last night, if you watched his acceptance speech, was there was this guy standing behind him. And his name is Carl Paladino, and he was a Tea Party guy who ran for governor of New York, but lost to Cuomo in the general election. But just the fact that he was standing behind Trump was kind of a reminder that if you think Trump is going to go a little bit in a moderate direction, here's this very radical right Tea Party guy standing right behind me as I accept this.
Yeah.
Victory speech. So
if Trump took Vladimir Putin, would people be shocked by that or not shocked by that?
They're the same person, right? It's like,
no, Putin's got a better physique.
Yeah, he does. That's true. We don't want to see Trump shirtless.
No.
Oh, God.
Not anytime soon. Thank you, Kristen. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Kristen McQuarrie of the Chicago Tribune. A quick break and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.